Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, a candid conversation as we learn about types of dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, frontal temporal, and Lewy body, and the effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, overcome obstacles, and find positive outcomes. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Hey, hello everybody. So excited today to be at Swallow Hill recording the show. I have a guest today in studio with me today, Yvonne Holliday. Hi, Yvonne.
Hi, Jill.
Yvonne's a good friend of mine, folks, and we have a great subject I think that's going to hit a lot of you folks that are in rural areas of the country. And the reason why I think this is important is because if we don't take care of the people in the rural areas, who will, right?
Exactly.
So today, we're talking about the Healthier Rural West Summit, a fantastic idea of bringing people together to talk about how can we make this better for our friends in various areas of the smallest crevices of the country, and this will hopefully catch on and move across the country in weeks and months to come. So Yvonne, I'm really glad to have you here, and let's explain to folks, what is the Healthier Rural West Summit?
Great. Thanks, Jill. Thanks for having us. So the Healthier Rural West Summit is really the vision of Dr. Phil Pollicott. He's a consulting professor at Stanford University School of Medicine. He's an affiliated scholar with the Stanford University Bill Lane Center for the American West. And he's a member of the New England Journal of Medicine Health Catalyst Council. And as folks have studied issues in rural areas, there's just a number of disparities that start to creep up and really lead to kind of unhealthier places. And so his vision, Dr. Pollicott's vision, is really that how do we share best practices, lessons learned? How do we create collaboration and really share the good things that are going on in the rural West and create positive change? So this summit is really dedicated to people coming together who have proven solutions that we can move forward with and that we can share. And even the ultimate outcome of the summit is to have 5 initiatives move into an incubator, which means that they would be in a place of incubation so that they can move forward and be replicated and scaled across the West. And we'll talk in a little bit about what those kinds of solutions are.
Okay, great. Now, how did you get involved? Tell my listeners about your background and how you became involved in helping Phil to pull all this off.
So I'm currently serving as the Chief Operating Officer of A Healthier We. Phil actually created a nonprofit called A Healthier We. He contacted me a few months ago. We met several years ago speaking at a conference. And, you know, many times when we're speaking at conferences, it's healthcare people talking to healthcare people. And when he told me about this idea, which is really to bring together people from a broad range of stakeholders that are really needed to improve health in rural America, I was like, yeah, that's really a great idea. We need that. We need to bring together policymakers, business leaders, civic leaders, health advocates and activists, as well as people who are providing health care, like care providers, hospital folks, and insurance providers, because that's what it's really going to take to actually enact change and make healthier areas. So he invited me to help him get on board and secure the speakers. So that's what I've been working with, is a number of the speakers. And really, it's so enlightening and energizing to hear these people talk about the solutions that they have to very difficult issues like suicide, opioid addictions, but also things like how do we have better access to food and so forth. So we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. But
okay.
It's you know, there's a lot of issues, but there's a lot of opportunities.
Okay. Well, I want to just backtrack just a bit to say this Healthier Rural Summit will take place in Salt Lake City, March 19th through the 21st. I will be attending, and I will be one of your speakers, and I'm real excited about that. And so will my husband, Jim. We're speaking on 2 different issues, but let's just off of the subject for just a second. Let's just talk about the problems that are in these rural places. Mm-hmm. They just don't have enough access to good health care.
Mm-hmm.
There's a hard line of them being able to even get to a hospital if they need it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that you and I have talked about sort of offline on this is that can there be better ways to maybe do telecommunications and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, this in 2 weeks on the 16th, I'm going to go to University of Colorado Hospital, and the neurology department is having their smaller version of this with their R01 plan to do teleconferencing with other doctors in smaller rural areas. And I just think it's fantastic. And the reason I'm involved is because I want to make sure that we have better care for people living with different dementias, Alzheimer's, Parcinson's disease, Lewy body, frontal temporal, and so forth, in these areas as well. I think that's what I'm going to bring to the table and say, let's talk about that. So in the layman's terms, those are basically the things that are missing in those areas. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, when you think about being in rural areas, there's a number of things that drive differences in what we call health disparities. Certainly there's the geography, but there's also the demographics and the socioeconomics and the lack of providers, access to care, as you said.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Employment is a challenge, and educational levels and cultures all need to be respected as we think about the rural areas. If you look at a rural area versus a more connected or metropolitan area, you're going to find an older population.
Right.
They're going to have slower population growth, slower income growth and job growth.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be a little bit less educated.
Right.
And there's a high dependence on retirement and other non-labor sources. So when you look at things like having access to care, only about 10% of physicians practice in rural America, despite the fact that nearly 20% of the population lives in rural areas.
Well, you know, that's so true, because my family lives in a small town in central Illinois, and my sister and I were just talking about the electoral votes,
mm-hmm.
the electoral
right,
college,
right, right.
And how we need those across the country. We can't remove those, because
mm-hmm.
if we do, people in rural areas don't have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's sort of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's break it down. You've got some health action areas that we're going to really focus on. And let's start with the first one, making it a shared value.
Right.
Does that mean trying to get folks that live in that area, that own businesses in those areas, doctors that work in that area, in those areas, that we're trying to get them involved? What does that mean to you, that shared value?
Yeah. So even before we go there, I'd like to talk about the four areas, because they're all needed. They're all
okay.
proven areas from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's New Action Framework.
Okay.
And it's really a distillation of real-world lesson learned coupled with extensive empirical research. And it's really, how do we catalyze social change to achieve the outcome mm-hmm. of improved population health, well-being, and equity?
Right.
And so this transition from crisis to well-being, these action areas are really interconnected. So the first one is about making health a shared value.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is about fostering cross-sector collaboration, which we'll talk about as we think about GEM and law enforcement
mm-hmm.
and their interaction with the healthcare community.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also about creating a healthier, more equitable community.
Right.
And then strengthening the integration of health services and systems. So those are kind of four pillars that we're using as we put together the agenda for the conference. We'll be having time and spending time with understanding solutions in each one of those four areas.
Okay. Do you mind if we break those
mm-hmm.
down?
Yes.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and start with the shared value.
Yeah. So as we think about making health a shared value, it's not about saying that somebody's values are not appropriate. It's about saying, what is their expectation around their health? What is their sense of community and their civic engagement in their health? Health is very personal. It's complex, but it's also created by where we live, work, and play. So as we think about our
right.
communities, How do people engage in that community? How do they have a mindset and an expectation of what their health will be? Because our health enables us to enjoy our life. Health care is an enabler of us to have the best health, but it's also our personal choices. So we'll be talking in that session about things like using cafeterias and schools and hospitals as an opportunity to bring in healthier food choices and introduce children to new and different foods in a very common setting in their school and with their friends. Mm-hmm. And so as we think about that, there's a number of things that we'll be discussing in making health a shared value.
Okay, so I have a question for you. I know my listeners are going to be saying, let's make this a little bit more on their terms. We know that people have learned behaviors mm-hmm. where their health issues are.
Mm-hmm.
As an example, I don't want to make anybody angry, but I'm just going to say it. I think a lot of times in my rural area that I grew up in, medication. Where sometimes in the bigger cities, we're more focused on preventative care, exercise, not just something to stave off the symptoms, but how are we going to have more preventative medicine?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's kind of an issue, and I'm not trying to, upset anybody or anything, but I think that's something that we have to really teach people a different way to live sometimes. How do we do that?
Well, and that's why we have these great models coming in. So there's one coming in from Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
It's building a culture of health in a rural area.
Okay.
It's a collaboration between people who are in the public health and people who are in the community and having a dialogue and taking action together. As we think about things like oral care, it's the use of things like teledentistry and integrating medical and behavioral health programs with oral care.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we have our health professionals also be that kind of first line of relationship with that person and their health?
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we help, have investments, purpose-driven solutions and investing to bring well-being solutions to rural areas? So that might be something like a community rec center. It might be collaborating with other counties or other communities and creating that sense of shared value around their health, because they're able to actually have interaction with other people.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be things creating a healthier rural Westerner. There'll be a session where Intermountain Healthcare, one of our sponsors, has a Live Well program. And so it's how do we bring people together in a social nature, not just to say we're going to talk about health, but in a way that's positive. We'll also have a session on collaborating with the media to help people have ideas and share the good in these communities and have positive stories.
Right.
Just like what you do when you train people to, care for people with dementia diseases.
Mm-hmm.
How do we make it a positive activity? How do we, respect the person, make it person-centered care, make it person-centered health, and really create the value proposition of supporting them in engaging in their health and not just taking medications. It is a fallback position. We have certainly had a lot of innovations in pharmaceuticals, but what are some of the other options that the people have, and how do they learn from other people? And that's where things like telehealth or online communities can be very helpful in connecting them with people like them. Sometimes when you're in rural areas, you feel very isolated.
Right.
And that can be very challenging. So how do we leverage technology as a platform to introduce them and connect them so they don't feel that isolated?
Well, that's an excellent point. And that's why I'm really excited to be invited out to hear Dr. Kluger's plan on how he is trying to expand Parkinson's care and Lewy body with Parkinson's disease to the rural areas. They're going to Salida, Kansas, in April, and unfortunately I won't be able to go to that because I have something else I'm doing that week. But I'm excited to hear how they're having doctors come in from rural places in Colorado, and I hope to bring that with me when I go to this conference. All right, so let's move on to the fostering the cross-sector collaboration. Did you kind of address that already? Or
No, there's actually a number of really interesting points about that. Like we said, our goal is to have, you know, 400 people there from this cross sector that of stakeholders that are really going to be needed to actually create a healthier rural West.
Mm-hmm.
And another vision that Dr. Polikoff has is that when I is replaced with we, even illness becomes wellness.
Right.
And if we think about wellness, it is. And there's a number of pieces to that fostering cross-sector collaboration because everybody wants to have a healthier population. Certainly our policymakers, our business leaders need productive people to be working in their businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Our civic leaders want to have healthy communities that people want to come and visit. Certainly our healthcare providers want their patients to be healthier. So as we think about fostering that cross-sector collaboration, it's really about the number and the quality of partnerships, and in the investment in collaboration, and having policies that support collaboration. And as we think about some of the things that we'll be talking about at the summit, there'll be a session on using cross-sector collaboration to build well-being. And that's a partnership between our health and human services folks and folks in even things like our cooperative extension services, which are very vibrant in our rural areas. We'll have a session on rural Latino health in the West. We're actually an employer, Driscoll's Berries, so if any of you buy berries, oftentimes your raspberries, blueberries, strawberries are from Driscoll's. And they realize that our rural Latino population is kind of an invisible population when it comes to health and care.
Mm-hmm.
So they stepped in and said, we as a business, as an employer, we need to be part of that. So we're going to be having a session that just talks about how do we empower and embrace our employers moving into that role.
Another thing that we're going to do in that section is my husband, and as a division chief of police, is going to collaborate with two other top cops across the country and talk about some various things as well. Can you touch on that?
Yeah, law enforcement, over 20% of their calls and their time is really spent on something that's related to mental health,
right?
Homelessness, substance abuse, dementia diseases. And so Jim Lorenz will be representing kind of the perspective on the work, the amazing work that he's done in the law enforcement sector, building a collaborative with care centers and providers when they have an issue with somebody who is maybe an aggressive form of a dementia disease.
Right.
We'll also have Chief Chris Skinner from Eugene, Oregon. They were actually recently written up in the Wall Street Journal for a really innovative model of having social workers to go out and sit down and address needs of people with substance abuse or mental health or homelessness. We'll also have Chief Patrick Gallagher from Las Cruces, New Mexico. He knows. They've actually done the data analysis to say, hey, if we have a frequent flyer or somebody calling 911 because they've ran out of their diabetes medication, can we just do some outreach with them and not spend like $5,000 sending emergency vehicles out for them to have appropriate medication? So really, how do we bring the realities of where people are going to access care through 911, and how do we go further upstream and really help people and provide the resources that they need rather than making law enforcement kind of the first line of defense? How do we make them a partner?
Right. And I don't think people understand how much and how large this problem is. Just as an example, if we are talking about kids, in Jefferson County alone, there are 5,000 homeless children in schools, living in cars, living in parks. And one of the things that I think Jim could bring to the table on that is that his officers actually take kids in Jefferson County that are in the Wheat Ridge area and they take them to the local rec center, mm-hmm. stand by while these kids get a chance to get a shower,
yeah.
and they bring them food
yeah.
and help them with their homework.
Yeah.
To serve and protect. People really knock cops these days. They're always talking about they're profiling, they're doing this, they're doing that. And this is something that Wheat Ridge and the police officers all along the Jefferson County corridor, and I'm sure Douglas County and Denver and others are doing things similarly, but that's in a big city. But Jefferson County reaches into some rural areas.
Yes, it's very rural.
And I just don't think people realize that.
Right.
Their backpack program, just things like that. Mm-hmm. All of that translates into our future, the people of our future children,
right.
living a better life in a better way and feeling cared for and making better choices.
Right.
And these are the kids on the front lines that yeah. are in the homeless situation.
Exactly.
It's sad.
It's sad. And that's, you know, that's why we need people in law enforcement to come and spend time when people are talking about health and healthcare.
Right.
Is that we do need to foster that collaboration. There's really no other place that I know of other than a summit like this to bring those people together
right.
and share and really kind of put together, you know, ideas and even have policymakers and civic leaders support that kind of activity. As opposed to saying, you know, why is our cost going up for
right.
law enforcement when it's really become a stopgap for providing some levels of care?
That's so true.
So
that is so true. I think that's going to be a great piece on that. Of course, I'm
mm-hmm.
biased,
yeah, you're biased.
I think it's going to be mm-hmm. a great mm-hmm. piece on that. So then let's go ahead, unless you have a couple more you want to talk about.
I do, actually. We've got a really, really interesting session that we're going to be doing on addressing health in mental health in rural areas. There's a group that's coming out of Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Montana has, it's called One Montana, and they formed it because they have one of the highest suicide rates
right.
in the country.
Yeah.
And so they have two levels of assistance that they're doing. They have a YAM program. It's a youth awareness of mental health. And really, how do we engage our youth in the conversation about their mental and behavioral health before suicide becomes, you know, their final choice?
Right.
And how do we use it as a precursor to suicide prevention?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing we'll be talking about there is really the opioid epidemic.
Right.
And we have a really strong integrated approach to confronting substance abuse. We'll actually have a panel that has folks from four states who are collaborating. So there'll be folks from Utah, Idaho, Montana, and Colorado. And in each one of those cases, they're in rural areas. They're building these collaboratives, and then they're sharing within their four-state area how they're doing that and how they're making a difference and really starting to address some of the addiction issues that we have.
I am so excited about this summit. I just think Phil Polakoff has just come up with a brilliant idea. I'm so glad you're helping him facilitate this and get it off the ground. Just real quick, let's talk about the states that are involved, because you've
yes.
mentioned a few. I mean, wow, they're coming
yeah.
to the table, right?
Yep. We have sessions coming from folks in Texas. Those folks, it's a whole county that's come together to do collective impact and create a collaborative post of fire. And so we also will have a session on fire prevention and suppression.
Okay.
And that'll be a group out of California. The group that's focused on using cafeterias to provide healthier local food sources is coming out of Hawaii. It's a chef, and he's bringing his work to the table. We have folks coming from Montana, the Oregon group I just mentioned. We've got great models coming out of Washington, the
mm-hmm.
state of Washington. Certainly Colorado is very well represented. and then we have folks that are coming from, like I said, Idaho. So we're really trying to pull from the best of the West.
Mm-hmm.
And really give people time to hear about the session, about the solutions, and time to network, share leading practices, but ultimately move forward five things that this group believes can be, you know, through this incubator process that can really make a difference in the West.
So will we have Nevada and New Mexico represented or no?
New Mexico is actually heavily represented.
Okay.
So in New Mexico, we've got the former Cabinet Secretary of Health, will be part of the cross-sector collaboration to build well-being. We have it, the ECHO Project, which is a telehealth model that takes and gives access to, you know, a lot of primary care doctors in rural areas, giving them access to specialists, like the neurologist that you're working at the University of Colorado. So we'll have three folks that are on that panel. We also have a rural workforce development session that brings together a collaborative approach. So one person from New Mexico, where they're actually a clinic and a provider, and they'll be talking about a mentorship program where they get youth involved in thinking about careers in healthcare. There'll be a rural nursing program that we'll be highlighting from the University of Utah. And then the University of Colorado actually has a not only a rural track in medical school, they have a rural residency program, which is pretty rare. So we'll be saying, you know, here's some of these really great examples. When we say there's only 10% of, you know, providers and physicians in rural areas, how do we attract people who live in rural areas that want to go back to rural areas, as opposed to putting somebody in and maybe paying for their school for a couple of years and making them commit to stay for 3 years, so at 3 years and one day they leave.
Right.
Because they really want to move back to an urban area.
Right. Well, the good news is that this podcast reaches people in 36 states now.
Nice.
I'm hoping to grow that exponentially to the 50 soon, but also people in 22 countries. So I hope maybe somebody somewhere else gets inspired by this and invites Bill to go to Australia, New Zealand, or whatever.
Well, it will be a video recording this, so healthierruralwest.org is the place to go, and you'll be able to get the video after the session, but also see all the topics that we've been discussing.
Okay, so we're going to take a break in a minute. In case you haven't noticed, this is an hour show today, but it's we've got a lot more to talk about, but we're talking about a Healthier Rural West Summit, March 19th through the 21st. You can attend if you'd like. Representation from the public would be fantastic. HealthierRuralSummit.org. Okay, and we'll have a lot more information for you in just a minute. We're just going to take a short break, hear a word about my company, and we'll come back and talk about more things going on at this summit today. And I couldn't be more excited to have Yvonne Holliday, the COO of this summit, representing everybody that's coming and putting this together. You're doing a fantastic job, my friend, and we'll be right back.
Living and working with Alzheimer's and other dementias can often be challenging. Summit Resilience Training provides education utilizing non-medical approaches for those who work with our friends affected by dementia. Believing families still need one-on-one assistance, we provide classes which help them understand the diseases affecting their loved ones, offering strategies and techniques for success with activities of daily living and working with confusing behaviors. We offer in-home assessments to clarify symptoms of dementia diseases and help families work together to find moments of joy while living with memory loss and impairment. Education programs instilling person-centered care philosophies are offered for professional caregivers working in communities and homes, which can be customized for their staff. Training is also available for first responders, such as law enforcement, fire, and EMT personnel. We are passionate that people with dementias such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and others are approached with compassion and understanding, and those who work with them have all the tools they need for success. Call us at Summit Resilience Training, 303-420-6988, to schedule a class or in-home assessment. Visit our website at summitresiliencetraining.com for more information.
Welcome back to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, a candid conversation as we learn about types of dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, frontal temporal, and Lewy body, and their effects on the people we love.
Okay, we're back, and it's exciting today because we're talking about making a difference. And, you know, I heard a quote recently, Yvonne, that said, if you plan on making something, make a difference.
Ooh.
I like it.
Whoa, I like it too.
I like it. Oh. So I have Yvonne Holliday, my very good friend. Truth be told, we've been friends for years.
Yeah,
but this is exciting, 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 because
We're talking about the Healthier Rural West Summit in Salt Lake City, March 19th through 21st. You can access more information about this at the HealthierRuralWestSummit.org. Let me say that one more time. HealthierRuralWestSummit.org. Everything you want to know, who the speakers are, what the sessions are about. It's just going to be a great couple of days of really brilliant, thoughtful, creative minds coming together, trying to make things better for our friends that live in rural areas.
Yes.
So as we come back, we're talking about the different sections that were the segments that you're going to have. We just talked about making it a shared value and fostering the cross-sector collaboration. How about creating a healthier, more equitable community? What's that all about?
Yeah. So, again, we're using Robert Wood Johnson's foundations for, you know, a healthier area. And, you know, our health is created where we live, work, and play. And sometimes in our rural areas, the access to things that create health may not be as prevalent as what they are in urban areas.
Right.
So as we think about that, kind of some of the dimensions that we'll be thinking about are the built environment, the physical conditions. As you can imagine, things like air and water and soil are different in rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of, you know, if you think about fires in the recent West, I mean, you have, you know, a lot of issues with smoke and the water damage that's created when there's runoff after a fire. And so we'll also be talking about the social and economic environments of our rural West. And then what are some of the policy and governance opportunities?
Mm-hmm.
So as we think about that, there'll be a session that's on from the Utah Alliance for the Determinants of Health. A lot's been studied in terms of where our health is created. Certainly it's created by our personal behaviors, as we talked about with creating health as a shared value. But as we think about the social determinants, it's our access to things like jobs and access to community resources. And so they'll be looking at what are some of the ways that we can have a healthier collaboration and create a more equitable community by having access to things that help us create health as opposed to sickness. We'll also be looking at urban planning and policies to create healthier, equitable, resilient communities. One of the things,
right,
you know, Jill is very big on is resiliency.
Right.
We have somebody coming from the California Governor's Office of Planning and Research, and they've actually identified 8 dimensions that make up creating health in our community. Certainly access to healthy foods, access to health care, but things like our transportation, we don't think about access to open space and how we plan for things like bike lanes and how do we make people having you know, healthier behaviors more of a norm and basically lowering barriers to that. So how do we do that?
Mm-hmm.
There'll be other models that look at rural workforce development. How do we, again, create jobs in healthcare from people who live in rural areas that want to go back to rural areas? And that's a really exciting opportunity. You and I have done some work with some organizations like Goodwill where we go out and we do outreach to children.
Right.
Thinking about career opportunities. And this is one of those things where how do we mentor and foster people who live in those areas that love those areas? How do we give them opportunities to have jobs that they can bring back to their communities?
Well, what I think is really cool is, you know, we're giving people an opportunity that maybe had to move out of those rural areas because of lack of work.
Yeah.
Just like people are moving out of my hometown left
yeah.
and right because there's no work there. And if we can create people more excited about in the healthcare arena, science,
mm-hmm.
Being mm-hmm. nurses,
mm-hmm.
and not everybody can be doctor and nurses. Sometimes this is putting people back to work in building trades and
mm-hmm.
things like that, like mm-hmm. Mike Rowe's working mm-hmm. on right now,
mm-hmm.
because you have to build these places before people can come and work in them. I just think that's a really cool way to bring people back to their communities if they want to, because more and more people are having to move out of the big metropolitan areas.
It's
just getting too expensive. Yeah,
right.
It's crazy. So those are really tough
issues that people are dealing with, and I love that you're bringing that up.
Well, and we're going to talk about things like addressing rural broadband availability.
Oh, the digital divide.
I mean, we have digital natives and our children, but really we want to make sure that our children in rural areas have equal opportunity to have access to high-speed internet so that when they're doing things and, you know, thinking about apps and even thinking about potential career opportunities, a lot of those jobs can be done in remote areas.
Mm-hmm.
So as we think about Microsoft just announced an initiative to improve access to broadband in rural areas, because there's such a great opportunity to have, you know, micro manufacturing jobs or computer support type jobs done in rural areas. We need to develop and foster that. One of the speakers will be the Lieutenant Governor of Utah, Spencer Cox. And he actually lives in a rural area. He drives 200 miles a day into Salt Lake City to raise his family in a rural area. And he is super committed to economic development in rural areas and, in fact, has just led a whole economic development process throughout the state of Utah to really develop those kinds of jobs. And broadband availability is a huge part of that. In Colorado, that was a cornerstone of our outgoing Governor Hickenlooper, was to have, you know, everybody have access to high-speed internet in rural areas. And so it's an issue, and we want to talk about it, and we want to figure out how to get people on board to support it, either through, you know, working with their policy people, their civic leaders, their business leaders, because not only is it important to have a telehealth access in rural areas, it's important for those communities to be connected to the greater world.
And that's harder than you think, because with our mountains, does that create some obstructions that are difficult to get over?
Right.
And again, that's why I'm excited on the 16th of February. I'm going to participate in hearing doctors from rural areas talking about how they can use telecommunications and different broadband entities and apps to create better care. There's no doubt about it. These are huge issues no matter where you live.
Right.
And it's not like we have a train that can get us from here to there at warp speed.
Yep.
If somebody has a heart attack or somebody has become disruptive due to triggers or something with Alzheimer's or anything like that. So all of these things are huge, huge, huge issues. So have you touched on everything you want on that? All right, then let's go to the section I'm going to be in, which is strengthening integrations of health services. So I'm just going to start with talking about my section now.
Mm-hmm.
I am super pleased, thrilled beyond words, that Dee Rita from the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment is attending and is going to be on my panel. Thank you, Dee, for that. Representing Colorado's new initiative that they just passed April 18th. It's almost a year old now, but they started rolling out at the end of 2018 about changes in assisted living and the way that people run these communities, the way they are addressing the people with dementia in these communities. And it's a sticking point for me and really gets me upset when I see communities that are not training their staff, they're not working in person-centered care like I provide. They are working on what I call task-centered care. So I also have Stacy Naslund, who is the executive director of a continuum healthcare property called Spring Ridge in Wheat Ridge, Colorado. And Stacy has a 32-bed unit, and she provides 100% person-centered care, finding the purpose for the people with any of these types of dementias that we've talked about earlier, keeping them engaged. She goes so far as to have resident-led activities. Yes, you heard me right. People with Alzheimer's are leading the art classes. They are leading the cooking classes. They are leading the how to put a puzzle together, book reading, poetry writing, paintings, all these kinds of things, and it's phenomenal. She has a staff retention that is off the chart. She has people that have been working there for 30 years. So for anybody listening to this saying, we can't do this, we can't bathe people when they want to be bathed the way they want to be bathed, like at night with a bath or in the morning with a shower, and having doors that they can actually walk out into the garden area and so on and so forth that are not locked and major alarms don't go off. There is a 10-foot Trex wall keeping them safe. But these are possibilities, and we want to bring this with Dee and the Colorado Department of Public Health and their new initiatives on how we're going to implement and require these communities to get better care.
Right.
Now, I have to say, some of that was created by families demanding that their loved ones were perfectly coiffed and groomed, you know, at 10 a.m. when they come to visit, and they didn't realize that the byproduct of that was that they were going to create a task-centered community that, in my mind, fosters a culture of abuse and neglect and lack of good training for people working in those communities. And so what my group is going to do is try to bring this and say, how can we spread this across the country to these smaller communities? And Continuum has three other communities besides the one here in Denver, which is a major metropolitan area. They're all in rural communities, and they're doing it, and they're doing it well.
Right.
So all you big guns out there, I'm calling you out, Sunrise, Life Care, all of you, you can do this too. You have tons of money. You've got lots of places that you can build. Build these smaller communities and do person-centered care.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, there's my soapbox.
I would love to see this be one of the initiatives that moves forward.
Oh, me too.
I think this has so much potential to be an economic development opportunity for these small communities to have person-centered care. When Jill described for me, when I was putting this together, you know, we know, like we said, and there's older populations in these communities in rural areas. They don't want to move somewhere, and they, you know, a lot of them don't want to go into an assisted living facility because of what you talked about in terms of that task-based care. So when Jill said, you know what, Colorado's taken a step forward, they've taken a leap, they're moving forward, both from a regulation but also from a proven model perspective, and so we need to talk about that.
Right.
And we need to bring that to our rural communities because not only is this an amazing place where people are not just sitting in a care center, they're actively involved in leading things. I mean, when you talk about having access to the outside, I live outside 99% of the time if I could. And to think about, you know, being in a place where the door's locked and if I went 1 foot outside, the alarm bells would go off, to a place where there's a garden, where I could go garden, there's a safety fence in the perimeter.
Yes.
But more importantly, the cost structure.
Yes.
Tell them about the cost structure.
It's less. It's thousands less,
yes,
because they're not medicating these people,
right?
And furthermore, yes, they do have a garden. They have a vegetable garden. They have a flower garden. They have a pumpkin garden. They take these folks to the movies. Twice a week, they take them out to dinner to a restaurant you and I are all eating at,
right?
And they just have a room on their own. People go to these person-centered care communities to live, not to die. That's the difference. And make no mistake about it, people, 70% of the people in assisted living have some type of dementia.
Yeah.
So you don't get a free pass.
Yeah.
So just because your building doesn't say memory loss on it, we know that to fill your census, and because you're trying to do the right thing, you know, and take care of people that you let folks in that have these various dementias. So if you do that, you're going to have to start cooperating with more person-centered care, and I would be happy to come and train your staff. I would be more than happy to do that. That's what I do with Summit Resilience, just saying. Well, there's other cool stuff going on. You've got Lynn Barr, the CEO and founder of Caravan Health, who's going to talk about accountable care.
Yes. So for folks that are close to healthcare and healthcare financing as a part of the Affordable Care Act, We were able to reduce some of the barriers to cooperating.
Mm-hmm.
And so accountable care organizations really formed as a way for hospitals and care providers, whether that's physicians or, you know, nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, nurses, physical therapists, social workers, they all could be part of one pool, and that they could take care of a population and be rewarded for doing preventative things. In our what we call fee-for-service world, today, you know, many times we go to the doctor, you know, we pay a copay, they get paid by the insurance. Our health and our long-term prevention of illness is really not incented. It's not part of the model. So as a part of the Affordable Care Act, we were able to form these accountable care organizations, ACOs. And so this group puts them in place, so we have a very strong panel coming on and to talk about
that. Cool.
It really is.
Cool.
Yeah. We have another session that's going to be talking about healthcare pricing and competition. There's some really interesting new models that are emerging. Montana just used policy to enact some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
We've certainly got the person-centered care opportunities for really health care. I've talked about person-centered care for a long time, and I think this is going to be a great session to spell out what does that mean? What does it mean when we approach it from the person
mm-hmm.
that's receiving the care and what that means to them? We're also going to be talking about the use of electronic health records to integrate oral, behavior, and medical care.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all know that, you know, if we go and we have our health insurance, it doesn't account for anything that we do for oral care, like our annual cleanings.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is an opportunity to say, what is the benefit of a medical provider, a behavioral health provider, and an oral care provider all seeing what your health status is and interacting with you to get you to the highest
right.
level of health? And it really is about health and well-being. I think that's the most exciting thing. This isn't about health care for the sake of delivering health care. It's about health and well-being. It's about you and what your needs are.
Mm-hmm.
We'll also be talking about subspecialty access to care. You know, from every place from, you know, Utah to Montana to Alaska, we have these opportunities, as we said, you know, building up broadband, that we can provide really excellent care without transporting you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, transporting people is expensive,
right.
and how do we support? There's tele-ICU units that are actually going, you know, intensive care units.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll also be having a group out of Washington that's going to talk about accountable communities of health. And it's really how do we collaborate and have partnerships with community resources to address the gaps in care, especially in Medicaid
right.
patients. I mean, if you think
right.
about Medicaid serving people who are lower income, what are some of those community resources, not healthcare resources, that we have available to support them so that we don't have to have the highest, you know, cost healthcare in the world because we're, you know, basically waiting for healthcare to be that stopgap place that people go.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are really exciting models that we are going to be sharing during the session.
And even the ancillary things that may not have as big of impact, but I can just envision more support groups in these rural areas
right.
and just those little pieces, you know, books for folks
mm-hmm.
if they need something that they can actually put their hands on and guidebooks and just all the other information that can come out of all of this is just
yeah.
phenomenal.
Yeah.
So you have literally heads of state. You've got some
yeah.
big people mm-hmm. coming to
we
this.
Do.
Blue Cross and Blue Shield's coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got lieutenant governors. You've got all kinds
mm-hmm.
of folks coming to talk. Once we all present, then what happens?
Well, actually, we've built in time after each track to take a pause and say, what did we hear here, you know, during this session? We'll have two tracks. We'll have eight sessions within each one of those four pillars. And within each one of those, we're going to give people time to network and to share ideas. And at the end of each track, we're going to take a pause and say, what from this amazing information do we think we want to move forward with and incubate? What do we want to replicate across the West? What would help me as I represent, you know, maybe from a policy or business perspective, the community that I came from?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to build in those times, and we're going to make sure that people have enough time to really conceptualize how their time there, it can make a difference. Because we all get busy, we go back to our day jobs, and that great idea sits on a shelf, and that's our responsibility as a Healthier We, the nonprofit that's convening this summit, is our goal and our charge is really to make something, make things stick, and to really move five things forward and keep those people who've been at that summit, who've experienced that, keep that hope alive that we can do this and that we can make a difference. Somebody used an interesting analogy the other day of Woodstock. You know, Woodstock was kind of a messy place, was as much, but it lived in infamy. It had,
yes,
it had a long-lasting impact on people. And so how can this Healthier Rural West Summit have a long-lasting impact on people as they go back and share with their communities? As I mentioned earlier, we're going to videotape it. So if people want to see, we'll have a video that, that has the essence of what kind of change is possible and how you can get involved and bring that change to your community. We've started with a collaboration around the Rural West. But really, I mean, these are rural issues around the world. They're in the Deep South, they're in the Midwest, they're in New England. But we know that people from the Rural West have some commonalities. And how do we respect their culture and commonalities?
So having said that, is this the only one that's going to happen and then you're going to try and replicate it across the country, or are you having more across the country to fit people's needs where they live?
Yes. Our goal is that we get this one off the ground, and we're all, you know, working feverishly to do that, get our incubator initiative off the ground, replicate this one in the West possibly in a year, and then also start some in other areas of the country. So, I mean, it really is a model. When we look at transitioning from crisis to well-being using this proven, these proven pillars, I mean, our goal really is to replicate this, but we know that people make change. Collaboration is where the stakeholders can come together and feel supported and have the courage to move forward with some of these models. And so we want to start with the West. We want to incubate and really keep people involved and engaged, because that's what our sponsors are saying to us. What's next? How are we going to do this? We want this to be real. We don't want this to just be another convening of sharing information. We want it to be about change and lasting change.
Well, having said that, that's already started. You connected me to Linda Miller.
Edelman.
Edelman. And Linda has invited me to come back and work with University of Utah Hospital on taking my training and putting it online for their
nursing.
And that's super cool.
I know.
I'm loving that.
I know.
So you touched on it. Sponsors.
Yes.
Got to give a big shout out to the sponsors.
Exactly. A ton of sponsors. We have Intermountain Healthcare. We have DMBA. We have Zions Bank. University of Utah is a sponsor. GOED, which is the Utah's Office of Governor's Office of Economic Development, is a sponsor. Morgan Stanley. And so please check the website, healthierruralwest.org. We're putting up new sponsors all the time. But people are really excited about the opportunities to support this work forward. Cambia Health is another, Health Foundation is another sponsor. So really encourage you to spend some time out on healthierruralwest.org looking at, you know, the agenda, certainly the speakers. Register if you can come. We would love to have you there. But also take a look at our sponsors. It's a really impressive, you know, a vote of confidence that this is the right thing to be doing.
I'm telling you, it's exciting. And even on the speakers tab, go on and look at the speakers. It's incredible. The people that are coming from various huge entities that care deeply about the people in these rural communities. And it's just, I'm super excited. Thank you for inviting me and Jim.
Yeah.
And we will give you our commitment that we will further commit time and energy to this if we're invited and if there's something we can work on to try to help get this message across the country.
Right.
It's just huge.
Right.
It's just huge.
Right.
So let's give the website one more time.
Yes. It's healthierruralwestsummit.org. Healthierruralwestsummit.org.
So even if you're not currently a sponsor, even if you're not someone that can pay to attend, but you want to get involved, go on that website, and I hope there's a place where people can write comments or get a hold of someone. And tell us what you can bring to the table, how you can try to make this happen in your area. If there's something specific that you want us to know could help us in the long run to tweak some of the plans we're trying to get together. I mean, it's just, I think it's really awesome. And right on the front page of this, it says transitioning from crisis to well-being. That's what it's all about.
It is.
You said it earlier, and it was really great. I want you to say it one more time. That the I and the we.
If I is transitioned to we, even illness becomes wellness.
Yes. I love it.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes.
So, you know, really, really great stuff. I hope you're interested. Go on the website again. Check it out. See how you can get involved. You can always email me at summitresiliencetraining.com, Jill at summitresiliencetraining.com, or go on my website, and there's a place where you can contact me and let me know your thoughts.
Yeah.
We think this is just a really innovative, collaborative effort that is way overdue.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out, but I think we've got good mojo on our side.
We do.
From just the great people that want to be involved and are going to try and bring something powerful to the table.
Right.
And
we have a resource guide online at the Healthier Rural West Summit .org. And if you go on and you can, you know, just enter your email address, we'll have your email address and we'll keep you apprised from there. But really would encourage you to spend some time on the website and give us feedback. We want to know. And we want to know what else is out there that's good. I mean, I have to say, in putting this together, the most energizing part is every time I talk with somebody and all the amazing work that's going on. And let's shine the light of day on that. I mean, we know the statistics. We know rural areas, you know, have different issues. But this is an opportunity to really see the good that's going on in the world.
I know. I love it. And Yvonne, thank you. Yvonne Holiday, my good friend, for being on the show today, talking about all this. I have joked, I'm going to embarrass her, that she's the smartest person I know. I always say that, and it's so true. But it's true, people. Phil couldn't pull this off without your help. I got to tell you that I love Phil the pieces, but he's got a good person in his corner. All right. Well, hopefully we'll have some great resources, strategies, techniques, and information for you for subjects around different types of dementias in the upcoming weeks, and I hope you like this new format. I will be able to talk for an hour without interruption. You can listen to the show. I hope you don't mind the one little commercial that I put on, but I love everybody out there in Caregiver Nation, my friends with diagnosis. You mean the world to me, and we will see you next week on Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
You've been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz. To learn more about her resources, services, classes, or to book speaking engagements, visit Jill's website at summitresiliencetraining.com. A new podcast drops every Tuesday, so join us as we learn more about dementias, resilience, and overcoming obstacles to find a positive outcome. Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz can be found on your favorite podcast provider. Please subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. Musical and technical support provided by Brian Hunter. See you next week.